So tonight's talk is titled Making Peace with Pleasure and Pain, and really especially in the body, since we're in this series on wisdom of the body. And just give a really brief overview of the potential that's possible in being mindful of the body. It's a very ordinary practice, right? So if you would, just notice right now the experience of being supported by the seat or cushion. Just feel your sits bones. How ordinary is that, right? Really ordinary. And yet, that little check-in, you could say, is the entire path of awakening in the Buddhist tradition. This is the practice that the Prince Siddhartha used to become the Buddha. And it's the practice he taught, mindfulness. And he taught mindfulness of body as a huge resource for us. And so just want to say a little bit about the power of being mindful of the body, and then I'll delve into tonight's topic, which is making peace with pleasure and pain in the body. And you know, making peace might sound a little bit passive. It's actually what we really come to is equanimity, being okay with the flux of pleasant and unpleasant experiences in the body. If we could do this, this is massive. This is not trivial. This is, in a way, the crux of our problems. So it's very ordinary and very profound at the same time. And so awareness of the body is a refuge, and it's kind of what I talked about last week. The first way it's a refuge is if you feel the body. So again, just check in, notice where does your attention naturally go in the body right now, and notice whatever sensation that is. If you're noticing a sensation, you are present. The body is the part of you that is always present. The mind creates past and future. But if you're aware of the body, you're in this refuge of the now. And that's a big refuge, because past and future is all the trouble. All our trouble comes from that. And we make it up, because past and future doesn't exist. Where's yesterday except as an idea? Where is tomorrow except as an idea? So the body is a refuge of nowness. So awareness of the body just brings you right into the moment. The body is a refuge in difficult emotions. Another key way it's a refuge in our practice, we'll do it at least one evening just on working with the tough stuff, how we do that. The body is the refuge. So if there's a state of anxiety where we are creating an unpleasant image or thought of the future, and that's where all the suffering is. There might be tingle or flutter with like butterflies, you know, in that state of anxiety. But that's a present moment experience. Where's the drama? Where's the catastrophe in tingle, 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 flutter, flutter, flutter? There is none. So our approach in working with emotions in the insight tradition is to fully allow the emotions by grounding our attention in the physical experience, where you're in the now. And you can watch the mind creating future and creating suffering, but the body, even if it's unpleasant in the body, it's not a catastrophe. It's not even a drama. It's just tingle, flutter, buzz, pulse, etc. So this body is a real refuge in your emotional storms. It's a safe harbor in the middle of a storm, be it fear, jealousy, shame, embarrassment, all of the tough stuff, sadness, anger. So this body is a refuge. It's a refuge from all the ideas our culture puts on our body. And someone was here last week talking about how it's hard in our culture, and maybe even particularly in Boulder, that like we're so physical, we're so identified with our body. She's like, people just treat me like as a body, and it reinforces, you know, a lot of negative imagery of myself. So mindfulness is a refuge out of that. When you're just feeling sensation, you can't feel lumpy, pudgy, wrinkly. Those are ideas. Those are not sensations. You can't feel old. Old is not a sensation. That's an idea. So all of our negative images about the body, mindfulness of body, being grounded in sensation, buzz, pulse, throb, tingle, tight, loose, warm, cool. There's no old, there's no young. There's just sensation. And it's a great way of relating to your body and making friends with it. So we'll probably do a whole class on that, because it's important. We get out of the cultural conditioning and just into really ordinary experience that is, it's easy to befriend. It's easy to make friends with our body through mindfulness. And then this one you might not consider, but mindfulness is a way of being, mindfulness of body is a way of really being honest with yourself. The body is the truth teller of your experience. If you check in with the body, it's going to tell you how you're doing without all your cultural conditioning. You might think in a certain situation, say a social situation, you're not supposed to be anxious. I mean, I've been a teacher since I was, in one way or another, since I was 22, I think. So I did environmental ed, and then I was a lecturer at the University of Vermont in the wildlife biology program, and then I've been teaching meditation for 13 years. And I can sometimes get nervous before I speak, and you know, and I might have some tricky little idea that's arguing with reality. That's like, come on, like, are you kidding me? You shouldn't be anxious. You've done this 1,000 times. Why are you anxious? What's the problem, right? That's not the body. That's the mind being sort of tricky. The body's just simple. Oh, tingle, buzz, flutter, whatever that anxiety might manifest as. It doesn't lie. It just tells you the truth. So if you really want to know how you're doing, ask your body. You know, inquire within, what's the obvious sensation right now? And your body will tell you the truth. Sensations of the body are the least conditioned aspect of you, of our, it's actually really free of personality. Personality is all coming from up here. The body just is, and it just reports the facts. So the body is a really important refuge for knowing the authentic, your authentic experience. You know, what's actually the truth right now. So all of these are refuges, a place we can rest in and thrive in. And then the last will lead into tonight's topic. The last refuge of the body is this laboratory where we can actually have insight into our experience. And then in our tradition, it's called insight meditation. It's because when you watch how your mind and body together are working, then suddenly you start to notice how you cause yourself to suffer and how you cause yourself to get happy. If you want to know how to do that, you have to watch your mind. But we're really in saying mind-body when we say that, because the body is such a powerful... is so powerfully interbedded with mind. So this body is a field of insight, and it's great to work with the body because we can be attached to the body, but we're not nearly attached to the body as we are to the mind and the personality. So we can start to, for instance, be in the body and notice that if we're aware of sensation, an itch pops up here, then you notice like a throb in the knee, then there's a little tightness there, and these sensations are sort of just coming and going. We're not in control of them. And then we start to get it, oh, if I'm not really controlling that, how is it actually truly me? I'm in my body, but is it me? Not if you're not controlling it, you know? We don't think of the weather as us, and a big reason is we don't control it. If you're not controlling the flow of sensation in your body, then who is the body? You know? And so you start to get some insight into the Buddhist concept of no self. So the body is a great laboratory for having insight. And these insights liberate us. They free us. When we realize we're not a separate self, we dissolve the pain of that and we actually belong. When we realize that everything is changing and it's ultimately not reliable if it's changing, that makes us let go. And when we let go, we're just happy. All that's left is peace. And the body teaches us this. So that is a overview of the power of this body as a refuge for your awareness. Anyone want to comment? Any interaction on that much? Or question? Please.
I'm wondering, like, when you're aware of, let's say you're having painful sensations or something like that, that seems, I know for me, I'm going through some sciatica stuff right now. And every once in a while, my sciatica will talk to me pretty loud.
Yeah.
And that does take me out of my monkey mind for sure, because I have to come out of my mind and focus on that. It hurts, change position or something.
Right. Exactly. So, yeah, our body, when it talks to us, it can definitely pull us out of, you know, mental stuff. And when you really get into meditation, you can actually notice that working with physical pain in some ways provides a really powerful object for your concentration. You can actually, it's strong. And so you can focus well on it. And then you have this bizarre experience of being okay with unpleasant experience. It can happen in meditation.
I know for me, in working with physical discomfort, it has been such a good teacher, and in working in that way, it's helped me discern that, like, the mind and the body really are on different channels, almost, you know, that And often the channel that is creating more distress, sometimes what feels like a paradoxical way really is the mental channel, even when there's pretty intense pain or discomfort in the body, that it's really more the story about it or the fear or reactivity to that that's been more distressing. And being able to see those on different channels, it's like when I can turn down the mental channel, it softens the intensity of what's in the body, even momentarily, which there is an equanimity that can bubble up in those moments.
Yes. And so that's a time where the body again is a refuge.
Yeah.
When there's physical pain, if we could be in the pure unpleasantness, again, there isn't a catastrophe. The catastrophe is like, oh my God, what does this mean? I think I need to see a specialist, you know. I've got this. What?
It's going to last forever.
Oh my God, I'm aging. This is only going to get worse. I'm not going to be able to exercise, blah, blah, blah. And I really need to exercise. I'm going to get fat and blah, blah, blah. Right? And often this is the experience, is that the mental channel, as you said, actually has more suffering in it than the physical channel. Now that takes some getting used to. It's not always easy to see how those are different parts of us. We feel pain, we don't like it, we're in resistance, we don't notice the resistance is different. The resistance is our relationship with the unpleasant, and that can be changed. And Jean, who teaches mindfulness-based stress reduction, which is a way of working, you know, with many things, among them chronic pain. But the research tends to show that when the mind is less reactive, there's actually less physical pain, because our mental reactivity is actually stored as physical tension. And when we relax the mind, the body relaxes, and there's actually less pain. It doesn't always work like that, but it definitely can work like that. So, and that is definitely something we'll do a class on, how to work with the unpleasant, and possibly even chronic pain. Okay, so let's sort of plunge in a little more, at least on the thread I have organized for this topic tonight of pleasure and pain in the body. So I kind of like to think that 2,500 years ago, the Buddha-to-be sat under a tree and solved your problem. And he solved my problem, and he solved his problem. The fundamental challenge of being human is that we're in a nervous system that only likes the pleasant. And if we were only having pleasant, that would be no problem. But life delivers us pleasant, unpleasant, and neutral, all three experiences. But we only know how to be okay and happy when we're having a pleasant experience. So our happiness, much of the time, there are exceptions, but generally our happiness is based on pleasure. And how's that working for you? It's great when there's pleasure. It works pretty well. But you could say the whole Buddha's path is essentially a way of having peace of mind and well-being in the midst of an unpleasant experience, in the midst of a neutral experience. One of the three slices of the pie is not very reality-based. If we really want deep, lasting, true happiness, we have to be happy with a whole pie. And it's got three slices. And we don't know really how to be okay when we're in an unpleasant experience. So if you think that would be good for you, then this is the right class for you tonight. It's good for you because you're human, and our nervous system, you know, has been formed to, you know, prefer the pleasant, dislike the unpleasant, and flat out ignore the neutral. When we make peace with that, we are free. And you could say, I mean, there's many ways to talk about enlightenment, but in terms of like something that's really common sense for us, you could say that being truly free is truly not caring if the next moment is pleasant, unpleasant, or neutral. If you're okay with that, that's the Gordian knot. That's the crux of our experience. That solves our life. So again, very ordinary, very profound. So there's an alternative. There is a way to be in a place of well-being in the midst of an unpleasant experience. So just a little story. A friend of mine, Susan O'Brien, who's a Vipassana teacher, I was on a retreat and she was telling this story. It was about the feeling tone. So the Buddha boiled down this pleasant, unpleasant, neutral, or he called it feeling tone. Okay, it's not emotions like feelings, it's feeling tone. Just this pleasant, unpleasant, neutral quality. And it's every experience, every sensory experience has one of these three qualities. Something, if you're looking at it, is pleasant, unpleasant, or neutral. Hearing it, P-U-N. Feeling it in the body, P-U-N, pleasant, unpleasant, neutral. A thought is pleasant, unpleasant, or neutral. An emotion is pleasant, unpleasant, or neutral. An interaction with somebody, pleasant, unpleasant, neutral. So, and the Buddha made it really simple. Our difficulty in life is our difficulty with these three things and the way that we get all three instead of just one. So she tells this story to illustrate a different relationship with pleasant, unpleasant, neutral, with feeling tone. And at Insight Meditation Society in Barre, Massachusetts, where a lot of the Vipassana teachers have been trained and do retreat, and I don't mean to say teachers, students, everybody, the Vipassana community. It's set in rural Massachusetts, and it's beautiful, and there's all these really small roads you can walk on amongst fields and woods and stone walls and lakes and ponds. So the retreat center, you know, people are in silence. People aren't relating to anybody. So when a dog shows up at the retreat center, people get very, very excited because you can pet the dog. You don't have to break silence. And this one dog would always show up, Kelsey. He was, you know, a neighbor's dog on a farm. And I'm not exactly sure his breed, but, you know, he's a medium-sized dog, kind of a chestnut color. And he just had this happy face. It really just looked like he was always in a grin. You know, he was just a happy guy. And so people were so into petting him and feeling his soft ears and all this. So Susan was on retreat. She's telling this story about being on retreat. And she was wearing a white blouse and a white dress. She's sitting at a pond near the retreat center. And she hears this jingle, 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 and she sees Kelsey running up, and she's just so excited. Oh, it's Kelsey. And as Kelsey is running up to her, she starts to notice a stench. And then she looks at Kelsey, and Kelsey is, like, covered in manure. And so he had been rolling in the farm fields, which had just been freshly manured. So he's basically caked with manure. And then he looks at her, she keeps her distance, and he jumps into Gaston Pond, the pond, and she's watching him very mindfully. And then he gets out, and like 3 feet away from her, does that dog thing, and shakes off all of that water-soaked manure, And she looks at her white blouse and dress, which is just looking like, you know, that ice cream. What is it? Oreo ice cream. Just totally covered with brown flecks. And this was her response. Unpleasant! So, this really illustrates, actually, a different relationship to the disaster of being covered in wet manure splotches. Unpleasant. She said unpleasant because she's being mindful. If you can, and this is how we make peace with pleasure and pain. We replace our reactivity, our oh shit, with oh. We just replace it sort of with oh, with interest, with curiosity, the curiosity of mindfulness. We can actually be aware of unpleasantness. You can be just as mindful of the unpleasant as you can of the pleasant. You can be just as mindful of the neutral as you can of the pleasant. So mindfulness actually solves or unties the Gordian knot. When we become aware of the flux of pleasant, unpleasant, neutral, we make peace with it. And that makes us free. So we are working with the linchpin, the crux of our suffering. If we could actually make peace with pleasant, unpleasant, neutral, and be mindful of it instead of reactive towards it, we are free. This is huge. And tonight, all we're going to do when we do the guided meditation is wake up to the play of pleasant, unpleasant, neutral in the body. So the Buddha boiled down mindfulness practice into four basic arenas. And it's sort of obvious. Mindfulness of the body, mindfulness of the mind, which includes the heart and emotions. And then as well, mindfulness of kind of the Buddhist teachings within our experience. That's the fourth foundation of mindfulness. But basically it's body and mind is what we're aware of when we're aware of things. But a fourth area that he singled out to pay attention to is this quality of feeling tone. It's up there on a level of importance. We pay attention to body, we pay attention to mind, because basically that's all there is. And body in the Buddhist tradition means the physical world, not just our body, but the entire physical world. But feeling tone is the quality within body and mind that he singled out as being super important to be mindful of. Because it's where all the trouble starts. It's our quarrel with unpleasant and neutral that is our quarrel with life. That is our difficulty in life. So the Buddha made it really simple and super real. He just boiled it down. If you really apply this, it applies to your entire life. You know, if you're really troubled by how polarized the political discourse is right now, then this lesson is appropriate to you. If you're worried about the ecological crisis and climate change, this is appropriate for you. If you're struggling with difficult emotions, this is appropriate. If you're struggling with physical pain, this is appropriate. If you're madly, wildly, head over heels in love, this is totally appropriate, this topic. It's the linchpin. It's the crux. So the Buddha was very real. We would be really bad at advertising in the Buddhist world here's a little cartoon, because we're always trying to be real. So here's a cartoon. There's a pudgy guy, then, and that's before, then this really cut, buff guy who's obviously done a lot of work at the gym, and that's after. And then after that, there's this very pudgy, dumpy old man. So that's Buddhist truth in advertising. It's very realistic, but it's a blessing that it's so simple and so realistic. This is the crux. And in the Buddhist tradition is the Four Noble Truths. And in the Four Noble Truths, the second truth is that the cause of our suffering is craving. And what craving really means operationally, like in our life, practically, is greed for the pleasant, aversion to the unpleasant, and ignorance of the neutral. And it's called craving because we're wanting something other than what is. We grab onto the pleasant, we don't want it to leave. We push away the unpleasant, we don't want it to arrive. We flat out ignore the neutral. And that's an argument with reality. It's a restlessness. It's lack of peace of mind. And so when we address our relationship with pleasant, unpleasant, neutral, we are addressing craving. We are addressing the cause of suffering. So that's what we're going to do tonight.
Can I ask a question?
Please.
I don't quite understand the suffering that comes from neutral. I just want to hear a little more.
Well, you could say that our ignorance of neutral is an argument with reality because we just flat out don't notice it, right? We push away the unpleasant. We try to grab the pleasant. We just completely ignore the neutral. And it's actually a huge part of reality. The neutral is everywhere. And so to not notice it is to be out of touch. And it's sort of like, it's not exactly peacefulness to be ignorant. It can be very dangerous to be ignorant. Does that answer? So here's a cartoon about the way our nervous system is wired. It's sort of a little visual pun of this very famous Japanese, I don't know what it was, an etching or a painting, but, you know, of guys in a boat in the ocean with, I don't know what mountain that is in the background, but this is by Hokusai. And the wave in this one is the cookie monster. You can see a cookie in the wave. And the caption is, "Today, me will live in the moment, unless it's unpleasant, in which case, me will eat a cookie." Cookie monster says that. Whoops. That's kind of our usual reaction. We'll do a little mindfulness. We'll be present as long as we're at the spa. And, you know, we've got the lavender oil essence, and I don't know, we've got the cucumbers on our eyes, we've got the cream cheese on our face or whatever goes on our face, right? So pleasant, a little our towel wrapped in a heated scent, our head wrapped in a heated scented towel. Oh, now I'll be really present. That's not good enough. We can be really present with the unpleasant and with the neutral. So, no matter how rich, how young, as if we could, you know, make ourselves young, how good looking, how famous you are, your life will still be pleasant, unpleasant, and neutral. You cannot become a workaholic and succeed your way out of it. So I'm always really interested in reading, you know, people who are like super famous, and hear them talking about like how they are. And Bruce Springsteen, when he made both the cover of Time and Newsweek, you can read in this is in a story in Rolling Stone, he talked about how super unhappy he was in the middle of being like the most famous rock star. I think he was the first person, maybe rock star, to ever make Time and Newsweek covers at in the same week. And he said the only time he was happy was making music, but his life was a total wreck because he had no inner peace. And there was a story on NPR where a music producer who produced a lot of really famous people like Ella Fitzgerald, Ray Charles, the Beatles, the Rolling Stones, all kinds of different musicians. And he published a book of his interviews of these musicians a few years back, and NPR did a story on him. His name is Joe Smith. And so the interviewer at the end of the story asked him this: when you finished doing the interviews over those 2 years, did you find you came away from it with any kind of conclusions about what qualities a lot of these artists shared? Okay? Ray Charles, George Harrison, Mick Jagger, Paul McCartney, Ella Fitzgerald, you know, all these different people, all these artistic musical geniuses, what's the quality they all shared? You know, I was waiting like, oh, you know, passion, you know, inspiration, you know, creativity. What was it? This is what he said. I felt that if there was one emotion that went through the old ones, the old musicians, and the new ones, it was insecurity. The next record, is that going to be a hit? Are they going to continue to be stars and be idolized? Because everybody has the moment when their records are on the charts, the moment when the crowds are at their concerts, and then the moment passes. They remain big and important, but they're not the moment anymore, and that bothers them. Pleasant, unpleasant, neutral doesn't stop. Our freedom doesn't come from building a life, you know, trying to get away from them. Our freedom comes from actually making peace with them. And that's what mindfulness is for. So let me just stop with that and invite your input again.
When I do these meditations, I have a reaction that it's unfortunate, but the thing that's the easiest to recognize is unpleasant. Whether it's itching or pain or... And it's so easy to watch how quickly that transitions and changes. And then pleasant, it's weird, but it's a little less easy for me to personally access. And neutral, I have to go searching for. So neutral I can find in my pinky, or I can find in my sitz bones if I, you know, not yeah. having back pain or whatever. Yeah. And it's interesting because I don't tend to walk through the world that way. At least I don't think so. But it's interesting when I'm attending... That's how I experience it.
And do you think your experience, is it just that your mind just gravitates to the unpleasant, or do you feel like your body is actually in mostly unpleasantness?
I think unpleasantness is prevalent.
Okay.
Yeah, is my guess. But I haven't spent a lot of time thinking about that.
Well, so this, yeah. And this is jumping ahead a little bit, but I think it's
yeah.
When we're going to do a meditation on these qualities of pleasant, unpleasant, neutral in the body. Now, the danger is when we do it that you're going to start to get intellectual about it. You know, wait, is that pleasant? Is it neutral? Is it mildly pleasant? Or maybe really neutral, you know. And then you get into some intellectual thing, and that's taking you away from mindfulness. So the way to really avoid that is to just call everything neutral until it's obviously pleasant or unpleasant. So it needs to really kind of jump out at you as unpleasant to be unpleasant, or jump out at you as pleasant to be pleasant. So typically, the breath is picked as a good object to pay attention to because it's pretty obvious in the body, but also because it's generally neutral, you know? So I wonder if a little bit you're calling neutral unpleasant.
Yeah, because it wouldn't bother me in my non-mindful moments. It's just usually itch, a lot of itching. I'm like, wow, I itch a lot, you know? Or I get like a little shooting pain there, and it's like, oh, there's a pain. Oh, there's a pain. There's a pain.
Yeah.
But it's overall not completely unpleasant. It's just as I'm, if I were going to choose a category, that would be more the category it would fall in.
Yeah. Well, so one thing in doing the meditation, we'll do it after the break. We do have a negativity bias in the brain. The brain is much better trained at noticing what's wrong than what's right. You know? The theory being evolution trained us, you know, to really be on the lookout for threats. And, you know, in our survival brain, a threat, unpleasant is associated with threat. And so apparently the brains that were good at that survived. And the people that were super blissed out maybe didn't, because I know they're so blissed out and then a lion came and ate them. I don't know. Dude, like colors. You know. But we still have some of that in us, right? Of course. But yeah, there is a bias in the brain. And so we want to actively, when we do the meditation, notice what's neutral and what's pleasant. To only notice the unpleasant isn't good enough. And I suspect if the neutral is going to be in a lot more than just your pinky. Mm-hmm. If you really pay attention and if you're really letting the pleasant and unpleasant have to be obviously that, to call it that.
Mm-hmm.
Because otherwise we get into a lot of tug of war in our mind. Like, what is it really? It's just like, don't worry about it too much. So you might be calling things neutral more in this next sit, I hope.
Mm-hmm.
Anything else?
I feel like sometimes I don't recognize the pleasant until it gets to the sort of craving phase, and then it becomes unpleasant. So it's like the unpleasant stuff is so loud,
yeah,
and so I can hear that all the time, and then I only notice the pleasant sensations once it gets to the point where it's a problem.
Yeah. So that's actually a good insight. Because then now you're watching the way your psyche and nervous system is kind of working. So what you have to do then is really get on the lookout for the pleasantness. Really start, like, set an intention to notice what's pleasant.
Subtle pleasant.
Subtle pleasant's fine. Yeah. Yeah. But here's the deal. With the pleasant, being mindful of the pleasant is a twofer. It's a win-win. A, you're going to enjoy it more if you notice it. You ever had that experience? You eat that nice meal, it's date night. You and your sweetie, yay. And like then you're already on dessert before you've noticed your food. You know, and so you're needing more, right? If you are mindful of the pleasant, you don't get to really enjoy it. So we need to really be on the lookout for pleasant when it's subtle, you know, because then we'll have more enjoyment in life. But the second thing is when we notice pleasantness, we're less attached to it because we're not fooled by it. When we're mindful of pleasant, we notice it's an experience we're having. It doesn't complete us. It's not the ultimate end-all and be-all. Oh, my God. That's a delusion, actually, in the mind. When we're really aware of pleasant, we're realizing it's another experience. And it's nice, but we don't need it to stay around. we're less attached, and so we actually avoid the craving when we're mindful. So really be on the lookout for pleasant. You know, I think that might be an important intention for you, just in general. But also when we do our meditation.
Yeah.
Okay, so we'll do a meditation in just a couple of minutes. Just want to kind of tell you one little simple story, very simple, that kind of illustrates a little bit how this goes, how we replace reactivity to pleasant, unpleasant, neutral with mindfulness. And that right there, really, that is the essence of our path of insight meditation, replacing reactivity with mindfulness. And so I was on retreat at IMS, and I had come into the building late for a sitting and didn't want to come into the hall. And back then, the floors were super creaky, so you literally could not sneak in late, because you were just going to cause a lot of noise. So I was in this outer room, you know, closer to the outside, and the room was kind of cold. And I was just waiting in this alcove or vestibule or whatever you call those rooms. And so I was being mindful, and I was noticing, oh, I'm cold. But when I really investigated the experience of cold, most of my body was just fine, but my right foot was cold. And so my mindfulness right away already clarified that. It doesn't make sense to say I'm cold. It's just a small part of me was cold, but my mind was in reaction to that. But so I replaced that with mindfulness, and I just started really noticing the experience of coldness. You know, where is it in the body? You know, how big an area is it? You know, really feeling the quality of coldness. And I was a little bit surprised. It was sort of a little bit pleasant. The way, like, wintergreen's a little bit pleasant, that sort of coolness. It was sort of like a minty coolness in my foot. Sounds weird, but that was my experience. So... But then I just had this little insight, and it was great. It was like I was just fine sitting there noticing unpleasant. It was kind of unpleasant, maybe a little minty, wintergreeny pleasant, but also unpleasant, and I was just fine. And the little thing, that the insight was, oh, mindfulness doesn't get cold. The activity of paying attention to that cold experience was totally at ease. Oh, cool. I'll just notice this. Oh, it's like this. Mindfulness doesn't get cold. Mindfulness doesn't get scared, doesn't get jealous, you know, doesn't do all that stuff. Mindfulness just notices. So that's just a little tiny story of how we become more free with pleasant, unpleasant, neutral. We replace the reacting to it with the noticing of it. Okay? So we'll start the meditation. A couple things to say. The first is what I already said with Jen is... we're going to use labeling. We're going to really be mindful of sensation, and I'll guide you a little bit in how to use the notes, pleasant, unpleasant, neutral. You actually make a mental note of what you're noticing. But you want to really avoid the big debate in your mind, you know, as I said. So if it's not obviously pleasant or unpleasant, then it's neutral. If there's any debate in your mind at all, it's neutral. So just label it pleasant or unpleasant when it's obvious. And that way you'll stay out of a lot of thinking about it. Now, the second thing is sometimes people actually are not that comfortable with noticing neutral. you almost feel like, well, I don't want things to be neutral. I mean, of course I want the pleasant, but actually I'll take the unpleasant over the neutral, because neutral is almost like, you know, death or something. I mean, I'm being dramatic, but... So I really want to put in a plug for neutral. Does anyone... Okay, don't look down. Maybe close your eyes. What color's the rug?
Neutral.
Yeah, but what color is neutral?
Brown.
Yeah.
Like speckles.
And what color are the walls in the room? Again, eyes closed.
Green.
Oh, good. You noticed. Great. Now, check this out. The most neutral thing there is space. So if you would, open the eyes and let your eyes really relax. So soften the eyes. Let your gaze widen so that you can notice periphery. And then tune in to this volume of space in the room. Just notice space. And now, if you would, just popcorn style, say one word about the quality of noticing space. How are you doing right now? Just say a word.
Wow.
Pardon?
Wow.
Wow.
Freedom.
Soft. Okay.
Slippery.
Wide.
So mostly positive. When maybe slippery, is it a little tricky?
Just
sort of noticing space.
Yeah, as I like focus on it evades me.
Yeah, yeah. It's kind of because it's like it's sort of hard to look at space because we're looking at nothing. But there's this quality, if you relax back and soften the eyes and kind of take in this space, often there's this quality, like some of you were saying, like wow or okay, relaxed. So the neutral, on the sort of ego part of our mind, we want the pleasant, but if we can't have that, we'll take the unpleasant, because at least there's drama. Neutral? Yuck. Just like, who cares? So, but actually, neutral is a real ally on the spiritual path. When there's not a lot of drama, your mind can quiet down much more easily. So that's why... You know, something like breath is a great meditation. It's a relatively neutral thing, and it allows the mind to calm. So neutral is very important. Okay, so we'll do maybe like, we sort of have already been starting to meditate, so we'll do another like 20 minutes or so. So let your attention go wherever it's called in the body. And wherever your attention goes, just rest here for a little while. Just keep registering this sensation. And what we're noticing is the actual tactile experience. So you might have the thought, if you're noticing the hands, oh, hands. That's different from the sensation. You might have an image of the hands. That's also different. You want to actually be noticing the physical experience. Buzz, pulse, flutter, tingle, throb, warmth or coolness, tight or loose. And it can be helpful to remind you of the target, which is sensation, then it can be helpful to make a note of the sensation, buzz or pulse or throb, flutter or tingle, etc. Just a silent whisper in the mind. Keep noticing the sensation here. Now let your mind move to some other sensation in the body. Make a mental note, a silent whisper in the mind of the tactile experience. Buzz, throb, pulse, tingle, flutter, etc. And you might notice how big the sensation is. And does it have boundaries that are really clear and obvious or more diffuse? Are there some parts of the sensation stronger than others? You're just noticing. Noticing the sensation exactly as it is. Now, let the attention go somewhere new in the body. And rest your attention here. Note the texture. Buzz, pulse, throb, tingle, warmth, cool, tight, loose, expanded, constricted. Notice how big it is, notice boundaries. Are some parts of it stronger than other parts? And for now, we'll just stay noticing sensation in this way. I'll add in a little more guiding later. You're letting the attention move around freely in the body. And wherever your attention goes, if the experience is fleeting, then that's just the way that one was. But if it's more longer lasting, stay with that particular area long enough to really register the experience, making a note of it. Though now we'll continue letting the attention move throughout the body, resting with sensation until the attention gets pulled to a new sensation. Making a note of the tactile experience, feeling the size of the sensation, the boundaries. Is it variable? Some places stronger than others. All of that is really being aware of sensation. And that's the most important part of this meditation. Occasionally, then add in noticing the quality of feeling tone. Is the sensation you're with obviously pleasant or obviously unpleasant? If not, then it's neutral. And you can make a mental note of this flavor. You can note pleasant, unpleasant, or neutral. If you're debating at all what the quality is, it's neutral. That way you just keep it simple. So our meditation is primarily purely sensation. And here and there we notice the quality of feeling tone and make a note of it. And so now just really notice, is there a quality you haven't noticed much of? Maybe it's been only neutral or mostly neutral and unpleasant. If you haven't noticed pleasant, actively scan the body to see if there's anything pleasant. And if there is, rest with it. Rest your attention in it. Actively scan the body if you haven't noticed neutral yet. And same if you haven't noticed unpleasant. May our practice be of benefit. May we be of help. May we all know true happiness, freedom, and peace.